Among all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am the wisdom. Krishna speaking. Purport. There are many suppressing agents, of which the most important are those that cut down miscreants. When miscreants are punished, the agency of chastisement represents Krishna. Among those who are trying to be victorious in some field of activity, the most victorious element is morality. Among the confidential activities of hearing, thinking, and meditating, silence is the most important, because by silence one can make progress very quickly. The wise man is he who can discriminate between matter and spirit, between God's superior and inferior natures. Such knowledge is Krishna himself. Dando damayatam asmi nitir asmi jigishatam. Maunang chayavasmi guhyanam gyanam gyanavatamaham. Among all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am wisdom. Of the four principles mentioned here, which Krishna states himself to be, they are vibhutis, or opulences of Krishna. This chapter is entitled The Opulence of the Absolute, commonly titled in Sanskrit Vibhuti Yoga. So of the four mentioned here, I particularly want to discuss today about Mona, silence. A well-known term even today in Indian spirituality or something like that. A Mounavrata is well known. It means Mona means silence, and Vrata means vow. So sometimes sadhus take the vow of silence. And in this way they lock themselves into their own world to a large extent. They may write something if they want to communicate with others, but it severely limits the communication. And in the West also, among spiritualists or persons who consider themselves to be spiritual, silence is considered something very important. Srila Prabhupada also mentions here among the confidential activities of hearing, thinking, and meditating, silence is most important, because by silence one can make progress very quickly. Now, what's that got to do with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, Kirtaniya Sada Harihi, which appears to be just exactly the opposite, that one should always glorify Krishna? And especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, it's a noisy movement. Singing, dancing, clanging, bashing, cymbals, gongs, ghanta baje, ghanta, it means bell, or it means this gong. So that's standard in Gauriya Kirtan. We don't see it so much in ISKCON. And nowadays, in ISKCON, we don't have so much of the loud instrument kirtans. At some point, there was some devotees expressed some protest that our kirtans are too loud. And now, even if there are 50 devotees in the kirtan, we often have a little small pair of kartels being played on the side, so you can hardly hear them. But the description of kirtan in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Udanda Kirtan, which means uproarious. That might not have been all the time, but that was, those are the ones that are described. So it seems to be very different from silence, which Srila Prabhupada recommends here. Actually, in this verse, silence is not mentioned as being anything particularly spiritual, but as representing Krishna, or in other words, a major feature of that which is secret or mysterious. Just like if a suspect of a crime is captured and he doesn't speak, if he refuses to speak, then, well, he won't reveal who his accomplices were. So in this way, by maintaining silence, he keeps the secret. By maintaining silence also, one doesn't reveal one's mind. So everything is kept inside. So that's, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, that's important. That's important for people who don't have the tendency to speak about Krishna. Generally, we hear the saying, silence is golden, is the saying. I don't know exactly what that means, but by comparing it with golden, the golden is supposed to be something highly desirable. So silence is golden. Generally, there's it's thought that, especially in mystic traditions, it's considered that silence is spiritual. Why should they? What's so spiritual about just not talking? It's not a positive activity. Well, that's the whole point of the mystics or Mayavadis. They take spiritual to be the negation of that which they normally see to be material. They don't have any positive information about activity in Krishna consciousness. So they think, well, everyone is just chattering, chat, 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 blah, 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 blah. The tendency when people get together, it's almost like it's a social pressure that you have to say something. Actually, one among certain people, one aspect of the closeness of their relationship can be that they are together, they can be together for quite some time, and they don't feel the need to say anything to each other because there's no need to. They're just comfortable in each other's presence without having to say something. But generally that social pressure is there. Vacho vegam, the tendency, the urge to speak. And generally whatever people speak, it's all for the purpose of furthering their aim of being happy in this material world. Some people speak deliberately to boost their own ego. They may praise themselves or denigrate others, because if we denigrate others, it makes, by pushing them down, that the idea is that our own position will seem better. Or they tell some jokes so they can be the life and soul of the party. Or just to call attention to themselves, like babies. They know very well how to call attention to themselves. They don't even have to say anything. They just let out a big ball, and the attention is drawn to them. But that doesn't work as you get older, so one has to become clever at saying various things, or speak loudly, and in this way attract attention. But much of what people say is to attract attention to others, or to manipulate others, or to talk nonsense. Therefore, people with very rudimentary understanding of spiritual life think that silence is spiritual, because all they know is talking or making sounds which are mundane. Of course, many people think that music or certain kinds of music are in themselves spiritual. I myself, just a few days after joining this movement, I asked some devotees, well, can't music be spiritual? And I mentioned the names of some well-known rock, I guess rock is, not exactly hard rock, but some rock groups. And Kripa Mai Prabhu gave me the reply, no, that's not spiritual. Those groups, they've come to drag you down to hell. So I got my answer very clearly. Thank you, Kripa Mai Prabhu, for that. It's not. It may seem to be spiritual because it touches certain chords, no pun intended, within our consciousness, which seems elevating. But, well, particularly in the modern age, much of the music is, it's really actually very demoniac, and we see the personalities behind it also very demoniac. I remember hearing one song. It was by a group, some of you, if you're as old as me, may remember the name, called Emerson, Lake and Palmer, in which it was a... it was set to a tune by J.S., Johann Sebastian Bach. It's it was a hymn, but he'd changed the words to promote atheism. Mm. And even though I wasn't spiritual, or had no spiritual knowledge at the time, I didn't like it. It's taking something which is trying to elevate the consciousness toward God and turning it around to deny God. So the music is... the music expresses the composer's feelings of reverence toward God, even though there's very little idea of actually who God is. But there's a sense of reverence with some affection there, no doubt, for God. But this rascal, he... With the same bhav that comes, the same feeling that comes of something very elevated, he simply denied God. I can't remember the words, I just remember some words. When the hour comes, don't turn away, face the light of day, it's the only way. Not very brilliant poetry. But the idea is that when death comes, don't all of a sudden believe in God, but just face reality that there is no God. So, for such a person, silence would be better than his atheistic attempts at composing poetry. And in general, people, they chatter on and on and on, so it may seem silence is spiritual. It's just such a relief for parents bringing up children who, as children are wont to do, scream and yell, not at all silent. Then to get the opportunity to be silent might seem to them to be a great relief. But that's not in and of itself spiritual. That's a material break from a... materially difficult situation. And if someone's in silence for some time, at first they may think, oh, such a relief. But after some time, they'll feel that's a torture. That's one of the principles of solitary confinement as a punishment. It's considered to be a very serious punishment. Why should it be as punishment? Because, well, apart from being locked up, but you're not being whipped or beaten, But the very fact that there's no one to talk to or relate to is considered a great punishment, because we feel that need to talk and relate with others. So silence is considered spiritual, but there'll be some level of spirituality in it if someone can maintain that for months and years without relating with others. But it's not a very high level of spirituality. It's negating that which is material. It's a beginning, but it's not by no means the highest level of spiritual consciousness. Still, it's one of the qualities which is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam and by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the qualities of a Vaishnava, which Srila Prabhupada explained that a Vaishnava is silent. That means he doesn't talk nonsense. We have this word prajalpa, one of the six factors that can destroy our spiritual life is unnecessary talking about mundane things that have no relationship with Krishna. Now, there can be talk of mundane things that have no relationship with Krishna. Of course, everything has some relationship with Krishna. But in this material world, the very meaning of the material world is that it's conceived of as not having a relationship with Krishna. So if we simply talk about the weather without relating that to Krishna or Krishna consciousness, then that's mundane. But if we think, oh, then how we have to serve Krishna. In this country, the weather is never extreme, but in some places it is. So we should consider if there's going to be a hurricane or a flood, we should take note of that. Or if it's going to be extremely hot, then we have to consider if we're organizing a parade, public parade, then maybe at a certain season it's better to do it a little later toward the end of day when the great heat, I'm talking about my experience in India here, when the great heat has subsided to some extent. Of course, everything a devotee does is in relationship with Krishna, so we may not have to explain how we're relating that to Krishna, but at the same time, we should be careful not to go on and on and on and on talking about subjects that are not directly related to Krishna. That's called, or at least in this verse of Upadeshamrita, it's called prajalpa, unnecessary talk. So silence in the Vaishnav dictionary means not exactly the same as is generally considered, but to speak only that which is meaningful, that which is in relation to Krishna and topics related to devotional service. Now, speaking is very important in Krishna consciousness, because the first two items of devotional service are hearing and chanting about Krishna. So even hearing, there has to be chanting before we can hear. So kirtaniya sada harihi, glorification of Krishna should go on constantly. And actually, there are so many topics of Krishna, it's unlimited. We find that Srila Prabhupada, he was as the ideal pure devotee who, by his personal example, showed us what it means to be a pure devotee of Krishna. He was always talking about Krishna, literally day and night. One disciple noted that Srila Prabhupada, he was resting once, and then when he woke up, he immediately started speaking to him about preaching Krishna consciousness, so that he understood that even in his rest, it was not that like an ordinary person, he's merged in the mode of ignorance, but In his rest, he's also thinking of Krishna and topics of Krishna consciousness. So silence in Vaishnava understanding means to use one's vacho vegam, the urge to speak, to use that for glorifying Krishna, for interacting with others, so for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, for glorifying Krishna. So in this way, devotee is probably one of the most non-silent people in the literal sense of the term. Sometimes we find very talkative people. There's this pejorative term for someone who's talkative. Garrulous means or in more common parlance, chatterbox. Someone who just they go on and on and on. Sometimes going on, and you may go on a 20-hour or a train journey in India, and you happen to be stuck in the same compartment or the same area as someone who they've got literally a captive audience, and they just go on and on and on and on and on, up till late at night, and then you wake up early in the morning and you're chanting and you're hoping they sleep as late as possible, and as soon as they're up, and it's off again, and non-stop verbal diarrhea. Just keeps on coming out. But a devotee is talkative because there's someone who's actually in love with Krishna, just he's always enthusiastic to speak about Krishna. We see Shukadev, he found a willing listener in Parikshit Maharaj, and Shukadev took the opportunity, and Parikshit was willing to listen, and Shukadev just spoke 7 days, seven nights, non-stop about Krishna, and didn't become tired, and was very happy to speak constantly about Krishna. So this is life. Life means to glorify Krishna. And silence, it's actually like a death-like situation. Of course, one may be absorbed in some inner meditation, but that's not the constitutional position of the living being, to be silent. The constitutional position of the living being is to serve Krishna, Jiveshwarup Hoi Krishna Nitya Das. And service is by Tan Manavakya, by the body, the mind, and by words. So silence, it's like being a stone or Srila Prabhupada in one purport commented that Mayavadis, they can become stones in their next life because they have nothing to say, nothing to do, nothing to think about. So they just become a stone. They enter into a stone. It's maybe a gravestone. Silence is it's like a death-like situation. That's why the graveyards are very peaceful places. You say silence is very peaceful. Yeah, you can go to a graveyard, it's very peaceful. There are many bodies there. People think that the body is the self. There are many bodies, but there's no dispute. There's no politics. No one's trying to get the better of each other. They're all living together very peacefully. So many people all living together. No arguments. Everyone's very spiritual. They all became spirits. They became ghosts. Everyone's dead. That's why they're very peaceful. But life is meant for seeking out. Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Seeking, inquiring about the Absolute Truth. That means speaking. Finding out. Tadvijnanartham sagarum eva bigachet. One approaches a guru with the express purpose of learning that science, the science of the personality of Godhead. So life is meant for activity, not for simply becoming like a dead stone And activity means the speaking, interacting, discussing. So silence is considered spiritual by people who have no real understanding of what it means to be spiritual. Again, the example of Srila Prabhupada, always talking. And not always talking about the Naam, Gun, Roop, Leela of Krishna, the name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But actually spending a lot of his verbal energy went into smashing illusions, into pointing out the defects in various so-called philosophies. He was a preacher of Krishna consciousness. Priti vite ache jato nagaradi gram savata prachao hebe moranam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, in every town and village of the world, my name should be preached. So preach means jare deko tare koha. Wherever you go, you speak, or whoever you see, you speak to them. Koha means speak. It's an order, speak. Krishna upadesh, don't talk nonsense. Give the instructions of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada was, ideal Vaishnava, decorated with all the qualities of Vaishnava, including silence, which means that even though he was very talkative in a positive sense, he didn't speak nonsense. His every word that he spoke was beneficial for all of human society. Here's a quote from the Hare Krishna Explosion. I'm going to read that. A quote from chapter 3. This is a book by Hayagriva Prabhu. A very entertaining style, you can say, and a personal and graphic perspective on Srila Prabhupada's preaching of Krishna consciousness in San Francisco, mostly in San Francisco, 1967, the early days of the movement on the west coast of the United States, in which many hippies in the height of the flower power days became attracted to Krishna consciousness. And hippie means they were taking drugs, they were into so many different varieties of imagined Eastern spirituality. Hayagriva Prabhu describes it as follows. This must be new. He says Matchless Gifts. Oh, maybe they gave the same name to the storefront. So Matchless Gifts is the name of the storefront, which is converted into a temple of Krishna in San Francisco. So, he writes, when some of the psychedelic drug cultists visit Matchless Gifts, they argue that the absolute truth is non-verbal, beyond the power of words to express. Well, in one sense that's true. Avang manasa gochara. The absolute truth is described as being beyond the power of words to express and the mind to conceive of. But that doesn't mean totally inconceivable, because even if we say it's inconceivable, that's some kind of conception. But that being limited living beings, our ability to understand the unlimited is limited. However, by his mercy, one can begin to understand him. Atapi te deva padambaja dvayam prasada leshanu grihita evahi janati tatvang bhagavan mahim no nachanya ekopi charang vichinvan. Is not possible by one's own mental effort to understand Krishna, but if one is favored with a little drop of his mercy, one can begin to understand him. So this argument that the absolute truth is beyond the power of words to express is a typical Mayavadi argument. So going back to the Hayagriva Prabhu's writing, fledgling hippies drop LSD, sit in lotus position, contemplate their navels. Far out. What's happening? Can't say. To speak is to limit. Those who speak do not know. Those who know do not speak. Yeah. Hippie wisdom, Zen Buddhist wisdom. To speak is to limit, they think. So what? Then they're just thinking in their mind. But the mind is also limited, that they don't consider. Then Zen is silence, the sound of one hand clapping. Yeah. Nonsense, Swamiji roars. You cannot speak because a fool goes undetected until he opens his mouth. Then everyone knows he's a fool. But why can you speak so much nonsense and not speak of the absolute truth? Certainly the absolute truth can be described and glorified. Vyasadeva has given us vast literatures. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, I am like this, I am the sun and moon. The taste of water, the strength of the strong, the beauty of the beautiful, the author of the Vedas and Vedanta, why cannot he be described? He has his pastimes and activities, and these are described gloriously in Vedic literatures. The Vedas glorify the absolute truth, and this is also considered kirtan. It is not that Hare Krishna alone is kirtan. Bhagavad Gita is also kirtan. There is no question of silence. Silence means to stop talking nonsense. So Hayagriva Prabhu is therein paraphrasing the kind of thing that Srila Prabhupada would say again and again and again. These crazy hippies, actually this title of the chapter from which this is taken is called Who is Crazy? So these hippies, on the strength of reading a few books and dropping LSD, think they're highly advanced spiritualists and think, well, these Hare Krishna people, they're singing, they don't really know, because those who know do not speak. But they're speaking. They think they know. If you say those who know do not speak, that means you don't know because you're speaking. Rascal. Another self-defeating statement. Other considerations of silence. Silence is enforced. We're not supposed to talk about by social pressure or by political pressure or fear. We're not supposed to talk about certain things. I don't know about now, but it used to be that to talk about death was you're going to die. I remember a few years ago in London, I was in a house program and someone said something to me and I responded, well, you're going to die soon. And the people present said, they looked shocked, and one of them said, you shouldn't say that. Well, it's true, but the idea is that you shouldn't say such a thing because it sounds very unpleasant. Well, it is unpleasant, but it's true. We're all going to die soon. So there are some things which by social convention one is not supposed to speak about. In Ireland until recently one wasn't supposed to talk about sex. And now that's changed. The social convention has changed. In certain oppressive states, countries, you're not supposed to speak in a derogatory manner about the government and the government leaders. It can be very dangerous to do so. Even if there's reason to speak in such a manner about them. Within our ISKCON also, there are certain topics which we're not supposed to talk about, and there may be a good reason for that also. One, there's a consideration of time, place, and circumstance. There are many unsavory things that have happened within this movement, but one should know the time, place, and circumstance to speak about those things. Probably not in front of Radha Govinda, probably best not in the presence of newcomers, who we're trying to give them some impression of the higher ideal. And if they hear at the outset about some of the less than ideal goings on that have taken place and may be taking place within our movement, then their whole opportunity to be Krishna conscious will be spoiled because of them getting a strongly negative impression. So in this sense, silence, it can be it can be necessary to be silent if one wants to be not oppressed by the government. It can be very wise to be silent in judging time, place, and circumstance. Sometimes people are silent just like a politician. They're asked to comment on something and they say no comment because they know if they whatever they say, it's not going to look good for them. So when they've done something wrong, they often say no comment. They don't want to discuss it. So that's a political strategy. Nothing to do with spiritual life, but well, it fits with this description of silence in this verse. Monam chayvasmi guhyanam. Because not everything that's mentioned in here is necessary. The opulences of Krishna as manifested in this material world, they're not necessarily all very spiritual. For instance, Krishna says, I am the gambling of cheats. So that doesn't make gambling spiritual. It just means it's a prominent manifestation of a certain activity. Silence can also be something detrimental. If we fail to speak out when something is wrong and we should speak out. Martin Luther King, who was famous as a highly motivational speaker and considered a very sincere and good man, he made several statements like this. He said, for instance, in the end we will remember not the words of our enemies but the silence of our friends. And again he said, the ultimate tragedy is not the oppression and cruelty by the bad people but the silence over that by the good people. So he often stressed this point. Of course it's pretty simplistic to talk about bad people and good people. Martin Luther King was one of those advocates of peace and love and all these kind of thing and human justice who, for all his propagation of love and peace, was shot dead. And also Mahatma Gandhi and John Lennon. So speaking about peace can be very dangerous. So some people keep silent because they think it's dangerous to speak out. To speak out against a corrupt regime or against something is wrong. People know it's wrong, but they don't want to say anything because they don't want to get shot, maybe, or they don't want to suffer in that way. But in such a situation, silence means to aid and abet those who are doing wrong. Another quote from someone, I don't know who it is. We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. That was found out by devotees who were devotees in Western Europe, as it was known at the time. They were trying to help devotees in Russia who were being oppressed But in the USSR, who are being oppressed by the Soviet regime, and eventually, after many months of trying to help them in various ways, they met with officials of Amnesty International. And up to this time, the devotees, trying to help them, trying to help the devotees in the USSR, had been having a, their policy was to not, to try not to upset the Soviet authorities in the hope that they might be less stringent in their treatment of the devotees who were arrested. Many devotees were arrested, tortured. But the Amnesty International officials told them, no, that's exactly the wrong policy. You should publicize as much as possible all the wrongdoings. And that will make the Soviet regime more afraid to do anything wrong, because they although they may not care for it too so much, but they also want to put on a face of being good people. So if it's exposed, all the wrong things that they're doing, then they'll become more cautious about doing wrong things. So even as a political strategy in that circumstance, the advice was publicize, don't be silent. You may think that by silence, then they'll be, if we acquiesce with our tormentors, then they may be less cruel. But the advice was the opposite. And actually, well, it's difficult to say exactly, because the policy changed. But then shortly after that, after the devotees started publicizing widely, worldwide, the oppression of the devotees in the Soviet Union, shortly after that, the whole structure of the USSR changed, and the whole society became much more open. That glasnost means openness. So, but anyway, that was some political advice. You may say, well, what's that got to do with Krishna consciousness? Well, it's some practical advice, and there's much practical advice like this in Mahabharata, especially. Charnakya Pandit has collected much advice from throughout Shastra, practical dealings in this world. So it may not be directly Krishna conscious to consider such things, but it's within the ambit of Shastric teachings, and certainly Srila Prabhupada, he often taught us such things. One thing we learn from Shastra, and we can practically experience, is that words can be more painful than weapons. In Mahabharata it's stated that a weapon of an enemy can hurt you physically, but the cruel words of someone who you take to be your close friend, that hurts in a much more severe way throughout one's life. And this is common in the modern world, where people think that they've fallen in love, and then one or both of the parties, after some time, they behave very cruelly, speak very cruelly, and they say such harsh things that it pains the heart. The heart means here the emotions, the emotions. Another way, of course, silence can be also cruelty. If someone who you expect to love you just ignores you, so that can also be very painful. Words can be very dangerous. With a gun, you can kill maybe one person, two people, three people, four people, maybe 10 or 15 people, maybe more. But words can stir up people and cause revolutions and kill so many people. The words of Karl Marx, indirectly, but the connection is clear by his philosophy or the application of his philosophy, how many millions of people were killed. And it's not just, you can't say it's just a misuse of his philosophy, because he directly advocated ongoing, constant, violent revolution. So, although Hitler's Mein Kampf is another work which incited so much violence and death, although that book, I believe, is banned in many countries, but Marx's works, the Communist Manifesto, Das Kapital, they're still allowed, although they're also, you could say, very dangerous. Some people say the Bible is very dangerous because it incites people to, it can be used to incite people to take a very, well, it's been used to justify all kinds of violence. So misuse is also, certainly it appears from Jesus, at least, maybe the Old Testament is something different, but Jesus himself is known as the Prince of Peace, and it doesn't seem that he was inciting violence. Of course, we can't just blame it all on on the propensity to speak. It's people's bad mentality also. We find that in the modern age, even Buddhist monks are inciting others to violence, which seems about the most non-Buddhist thing anyone could do, seeing as Buddha preached ahimsa paramo dharma. Non-violence is the highest dharma. But anyway, the point is that speech can incite others to violence. Violence, of course, what is violence? In the Vedic understanding, for a king to punish a severe criminal with death is actually mercy on the criminal, because he becomes freed from sinful reactions by that punishment. And is the king's failure to do so, to commit that violent act against the criminal, that is a kind of violence, although it's not directly seen how it's violence, but the criminal will have to suffer more in future. So there are many subtle considerations, which is why we have to talk and discuss all these things to understand. Now, talking about speech and words that can incite violence and killing, but at a less severe level, gossip, slander, unnecessarily talking of others in a negative way, fault finding, all these things, they can cause so much distress to individuals and discord within human society, within Vaishnav society. So gramya katha, village talk, just unnecessary talk, that should be cut out of devotee's life. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, especially about renunciants, vairagi bhai, gramya kata na bolibe jabe milibeyane, gramya kata na shunibekane. He says that when a renunciant, especially when he meets with others, he shouldn't hear or discuss about worldly matters. Gramya kata we can translate as worldly matters. So the modern world is an explosion of gramya kata in the form of the internet, Facebook, Skype. It's just unlimited opportunities to become completely absorbed in complete frivolous nonsense, and even they've invented these sports and fashions and celebs, and it's they just so and so celeb came to a party wearing such and such a dress, not with her boyfriend, which means maybe she's dumping the boyfriend. Who's going to be the next one? And it goes on and on, just a massive business all centered around absolutely petty and meaningless discussion of completely useless people. Many of these people who are celebs, what do they do? They're a film star or a football player, something like this. Just something completely useless. So it's become a multi-million-dollar industry of promoting Gramya Katha and Facebook and how many likes you. I heard, I don't know if it's true here, but I heard in India that people they put something on Facebook, and if they don't get any likes or enough likes, that means someone has to click and say like, then they become all depressed. Ooh. So you have to try and do something so that people like what you say, or they assume some persona. And even though they're so timid, they wouldn't say boo to a cat. On Facebook, they're like some big lion roaring. Srila Prabhupada, when it was first proposed that telex be installed in the temples, that's a, if we think back now, we used to use telex. We have to. I remember this was being early 1980s. You have to go to the post office, type in your message, and then it gets sent by ticker tape and then interpreted and printed out at the other end. Very, nowadays we'd call that a very primitive means of interaction, but it was cutting-edge technology at the time. So Srila Prabhupada, first when the proposal was given to install telex in all the temples so devotees could communicate effectively, efficiently, much cheaper than telephone, Prabhupada said, no, it'll simply increase the prajalpa. And look nowadays what we have, unlimited prajalpa, and people are completely addicted to it. They spend more time on their Facebook and their smartphone and all this kind of thing than actually interacting with real people. They've entered the world of technological Gramya Katha. It's given opportunity to just magnify this more and more and more. So our Varnashram communities that we're trying to, or we are, by Prabhupada's mercy, beginning to establish in India. So one of the things we're promoting is no phone. You can have one phone that's required for the whole project. That's all. Nothing more. And the devotees, they give up their city life, their well-paying jobs, they give up electricity, but to give up the phone, their own personal phone, so difficult for them. It's such an attachment to have the opportunity to chit-chat with anyone at any time, at any place. And we see people, even they're standing in a queue or something like that, they have nothing particular to say to anyone, but still they look to see, has anyone called me? Maybe I'll call someone just to chit-chat with them. It's it's been made a central part of the culture, just to the opportunity to talk nonsense and be heard by others, not that they're really listening, on a wide scale. Not that anyone's listening to anyone. Is anyone listening to anyone on Facebook? Hardly. I doubt it. I mean, I hardly go there. I looked once because I was told I had a Facebook account in my name, so I had a look at it. This was last year, about this time last year. World Cup soccer was going on, so I saw in my name there was some conversation going on, and someone wrote in there, Germany 4, Portugal 0, wow! What has that got to do with me or with Krishna consciousness or anything? It's just absolutely, I don't understand up till now who or what in any way might be connected with me would type that in. And who typed it in? Well, I don't know, because it's an anonymous someone. So, better be silent. If you, rather than talking nonsense, better be silent. Just shut up and keep quiet, that's all. But better than that, much better than that, is to chant Hare Krishna. But we should also consider when we stop chanting Hare Krishna, then what do we speak? We can see actually how much someone is actually absorbed in the holy name, not only when they're chanting the holy name, someone may appear to be very absorbed, but then again we find so many musicians, they're absorbed in completely mundane music. We'll find people singing with great feeling, "I love you, your cheeks are so beautiful." It's a lot of feeling, it might seem like prema or bhava, but it's just totally mundane. So we'll see if someone actually has love for the holy name, when they are love for Krishna, when the kirtan stops, we may see better, and how they conduct their life when they're not singing. And what do they speak? Sthita pragyasya ka bhasha. Arjuna asks Krishna, how does a person fixed in consciousness, the first thing he asks Krishna, what does he say? Sthita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhi stasya keshava sthita dhi king prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. What does he talk? The first thing Arjuna wanted, he didn't ask Krishna, how is a transcendentally situated person, how is he silent? He didn't ask that. He asked, what does he say? How does he converse with others? How does he sit? What is his bodily movement? So these things, we can judge a person, as Srila Prabhupada is quoted there. We know someone but by what they speak. A fool is recommended to be silent, because you don't know he's a fool. He might act in a foolish way also, but it becomes apparent when he speaks. So better than chattering like a monkey is to be silent. And better than that is to chant Hare Krishna. Speaking can be good, should be good, but we have to know what to speak. Something like that example Srila Prabhupada gave, a knife. It can be used to cut vegetables, can be used, a surgeon can use a knife to cut the body of someone in such a way that heals the person of some disease, or it can be used to kill someone violently, murder. So speech in itself is not bad. Silence in itself is not good. But we have to know the proper application. So the best silence is not speaking any nonsense. Speak about topics connected with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? Silence is?
Consensus.
What do you mean?
It means if you don't speak out, you just...
Oh, I see. Yeah. What is that? That's Srila Prabhupada, he quoted Sanskrit as saying, Monam Samati Lakshanam. Silence is a sign of agreement. If you don't say something, it means it's taken to mean that you agree with it. If you speak too much about the injustice of the modern world, then you get too much negative energy. I never heard Prabhupada talk about negative energy. Anyone ever heard? Negative energy. It's negative energy, positive energy. Yeah, we should point out the defects of the modern world. But according to the guidelines given by Shastra, we can point out, for instance, in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, it's described that, there are so many descriptions. Chaga prayeshu dheneshu, the cows will become small like goats. what is that? Vipratram sutram eva hi. One will be considered a Brahmin just because he wears a thread. Dampate biruche hetu. People will become married simply just by sexual attraction. So many symptoms are given. So we can point that out. But we should also point out the Shukadev, after giving this description, he said, Kale doshanidhe rajan astahieko mahan guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sango parang rajit. Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, amid which there is one great quality, that by chanting the name of Krishna, or glorifying Krishna, actually, didn't specifically say the name, one can become free from all these bad influences and go to the supreme destination. So yes, simply to harp on the badness of this world at the present time is not very helpful unless we also give the solution. So that should be considered. Yeah.
In the class that you gave about what you learned from Bengali culture, you mentioned that sometimes if someone commits some crime and then he's dealt with without love, then it's a greater crime.
Yeah, in Bengali culture, it's considered that if someone's done something wrong, crime is quite a strong word, but if someone's done something wrong and they need to be corrected, but they're not corrected in an affectionate manner, then that is considered worse, can be considered worse than the original fault. How can we apply that more? Well, we have to apply it, but without getting on the mental platform. Because, recently, just as I was leaving Moscow, a couple of weeks, something like that ago, one devotee asked me, he's living in an area just in the suburbs outside Moscow, an area where many devotees have built houses in that area. And in one of the houses, there's Mangal Aarti every morning at 5 o'clock, but hardly anyone goes. So a devotee asked me, he asked me for some service he could do. So I said, well, you encourage all the devotees to go to Mangal Aarti. And then I got an email a few days later saying that the devotees had said to him that before you tell us to go to Mangal Aarti, you should make a good relationship with us. So, and he asked, well, then what should I do? And I just thought, well, that's just an excuse, that's insincerity, because if you put so much emphasis on the way you say something without considering the content, then people will just take that as an excuse. Oh, you didn't say it to me nicely. They're not sincere. Another consideration is that the very fact that you're telling someone you are asking them, please go to Mangal Aarti, that in itself shows some concern for them, is it not? So it comes to the position that you can't wake up someone who's pretending to be asleep. What can you do? There's no cure for insincerity. If someone has a modicum of sincerity, then you can begin to help them. Or at least if they're submissive to some authority, then you can begin to help them. But if people are out and out insincere, then there's nothing you can do to help them. And I'm afraid in our movement that so much emphasis on relationships without emphasis on, well, there are some basic things we have to follow. Relationship, okay, but first of all, get up in the morning, chant 16 rounds. Relationship should be considered, but there are certain vows that we've taken that should be followed. First, let's see to that. Or don't, in the name of having good relationships, don't just say, well, we don't upset him, so let him sleep all day. But that's not beneficial to anyone, saying that. Shruta Kirti Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's personal servant for some time, after the passing of Srila Prabhupada, quite some years later, he said that Srila Prabhupada quite often would shout at his disciples. And Srila Prabhupada himself personally said, I have a hot temper. So he said, he would shout. And when he shouted at you, it wasn't pleasant. You didn't experience it as pleasant. It was not pleasant. But Shruta Kirti Prabhu said, I'd do anything to have the opportunity to have Srila Prabhupada shout at me again. The experience is unpleasant, but it's all Prabhupada's mercy. Nowadays in our ISKCON, if you shout at someone, they'll probably, it'll be all over the internet, and you may have to go for psychological counseling or something like this. It doesn't seem to work, because everyone's in their own little egoistic cyst, and for everyone, protecting their own false ego is the main purpose of life. So Hare Krishna. Having said that, still a question? Yeah.
Junior devotee react to a senior devotee, the senior devotee using his speech in a way that discourages the junior devotee?
How can a junior devotee react to a senior devotee who uses his speech to discourage the junior devotee?
From his vow of brahmacharya,
for example. Well, it's a very general question. I guess I can give a general answer, then you can offer respect from a distance. Be respectful, but then if you feel that the senior devotee is misusing their seniority in relation to you, then you can keep a distance, that's all. You gave a general question, I gave a general answer. So, anything else? From anyone else?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, let's take a question over here. Yeah.
Question about Kirtan.
From hearing a kirtanir at a kirtan mela, someone had a profound effect on their heart. Okay, well, let's see how the profound effect manifested. Did it manifest as that devotee regularly rising in the morning, going to Mangalarti, chanting 16 rounds? Or is it just some emotion in the heart? If it's just some feeling in the heart and there's no practical manifestation of it, then we can say it's not truly on the spiritual platform. We know so many devotees, they have all these wonderful feelings when they go to the Kirtan Mela, but
Srila Prabhupada wrote that the symptom, I'm paraphrasing here, the symptom of actual chanting, if one's actually chanting Hare Krishna, is that one will be more enthusiastic for service. And that should be in the Bhakti Shastri course. One should come out of the Bhakti Shastri course very enthusiastic to serve and to share this knowledge and preach. Otherwise, what's the actual benefit? So similarly with kirtan, oh, it's so wonderful, we have 7 days of kirtan, and then go home and back to the TV. So? It may be valuable for people who are at that level, but it's not, certainly not the level that Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada didn't come from the spiritual world and go on that boat and struggle in America just to bring people up to the lowest neophyte level of thinking that the feelings in their heart which they get from hearing someone who doesn't himself practice Krishna consciousness seriously, that the feelings in their heart, that's profound Krishna consciousness. For that matter, so many people, they'll contemplate Jesus in their heart and have profound feelings, and then they'll go home and eat roast beef. So where's the actual spiritual advancement? There has to be something. In Shastra, there are measurable, there are quantifiable symptoms are mentioned. Just like, for instance, in the matter of considering who one should approach for shelter and initiation in Krishna consciousness, it's not said that, well, you should find someone who's always seeing Krishna within. There are certain symptoms that he should be strictly practicing Krishna consciousness. It's quantifiable symptoms. What can a neophyte know? Anyone can say, I'm feeling Krishna in my heart. They may even think they are, but there is certain symptoms. Acharya means he acts in such a way that others can follow. So, just that you say, well, I had a profound feeling in my heart. Okay, that's very nice. All right, very good. Where do we go from here? I remember one devotee I was with, he's known for his singing. And someone said to me, because I was with him quite a lot for some months, and one devotee I met said, oh, he sings so nicely, he must be a very, really nice devotee. But actually, when that devotee's not singing, his tongue is so sharp and harsh, and in his dealings with others, it's difficult to be around him, but he sings very nicely. There are so many like that. I learned in Bangladesh, people can sing nicely, but it doesn't necessarily mean when they stop singing that they act properly in Krishna consciousness. So, Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.